What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy, Morgan. Russ, I have to defer today's topic to you because you are so much older than me. I mean, you are the one that is aging the most out of all of us, which is representative of your hair, the gray. I mean, let's just be honest.
Man, that was pretty low, Stallion. I mean, I get it. You got the black mane rolling over there. It looks good. I got the gray speckle. You know, I thought it was like the
salt and pepper.
Yeah, the distinguished gentleman look. That's what I was going for.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Richard Gere can get away with it, but I don't know about Russ Morgan.
Yeah, me either. Well, I will say today's interview hit home with me in a lot of ways. When we started talking with our guest John King, and he started talking about extended healthcare needs, started talking about issues that happen in his personal family life. And he challenged some things that I really had not focused on. I don't know about you, but my parents are now in their early 70s, and we're getting closer and closer to needing to know what's going to happen potentially when that time comes and maybe their health fails. And when he talked about being in the hospital with his father, the question marks, the things he had to go through, it made me think of my dad. Literally, my sister and I got together this week. We were at my dad's house. I started asking him, like, Dad, do you have like an advanced medical directive? And he's like, who? You're right. And to be honest, I don't even really understand what I'm asking. I know it has something to do with like, if your organ stopped or whatever, do you have like a do not resuscitate? Do you have some of these things that would you go on life support? How long? I just know from listening to that story that John shares that we're not prepared as individuals to try to make that decision. And you definitely don't want to make it in the moment. Make it when everybody is thinking clearly. And more importantly, you want the person whose body it is to be a part of that discussion. And that's what doesn't happen. There was a lot of things that just awoke me to areas that I need to clear up. And I'm kind of right at that stage where this is something that's come reality over the next maybe 10 to 15 years.
Well, the kind of conversations that John shares with us that we should be having now they really make so much sense. But there were things that we had to hear it from his perspective of almost being educated overnight. I mean, for lack of a better term, he really got thrown into the frying pan with some of these things. And so his stories really make it real. And I feel like his passion came through in his interview with us that, man, more people need to be taking action. That's what I really walked away
from. And I did say that, because a lot of times this conversation seems to be more directed to, hey, I'm getting older. I need to start looking into some of these options. And when he talked about what went on with his wife, obviously the statistics don't lie. We're not getting healthier as we get older, right? We're aging and things are happening, and the protection measures that we need to put in place that, you know, you would think because we're in this world that we know how all this stuff works and we would have it all figured out, and we don't. And I'm so grateful to have specialists like him come on and share ideas. So he's going to help you debunk some of the financial myths that surround this whole extended healthcare, or some people refer to it as long-term care. I just want you to know, go into it with open ears, because after listening to this, Joey, he and I are going to sit down and I'm going to be, you know, setting up plans for my wife and I, because I definitely know that we need to get some of these things in place.
Well, absolutely. And I think you're going to gain a lot more than just what we've said here. Let's go ahead and jump into the conversation with John King. Welcome into the show. Today, we have John King joining us as our expert today. Man, so glad to have you in the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, John, it's not every day that we get to sit down with somebody and talk about things that are outside of our realm. That's a joke.
literally every day.
Joey and I have such limited experience and expertise that it's easy for us to have experts in the room. But I want to go back to a couple years ago, mm-hmm. right? You're 25. You're over at the University of Alabama. We'll keep all the jokes aside for that part.
Please, thank you.
You're a graduate student. Uh-huh. You're doing your first counseling session, and some things happened. Tell us a little bit about that day.
Right. So March of 99, actually, I go in to do my first counseling session, and I was really excited because I had studied for 7 years to be able to make a difference in people's lives, you know? And this lady comes in, she was obviously distraught. You all tell people very well how important planning for the known and unknown is, especially when it comes to life insurance. Well, her husband hadn't spoken to you all. So she had 3 kids and her husband, they were in their early 30s. He unexpectedly died.
Wow.
So she was there putting herself through law school to provide for her family. And it was incredibly emotional. I just held up the metaphorical mirror. I was doing some reflective listening. I was taking notes and doing everything that I was trained in class to do. And at the end of the session, it was incredibly helpful for her. And she thanked me so much. And I felt like I had done some good.
So you're sitting there, 25 years old, a mom of several kids, and her husband's just died. And now she's laying it out on the line. You're like, this is awesome that my first experience, this is the conversation I'm thrown into.
It was a bit heavy.
Not like I just lost a boyfriend, a broken nail. Or Joey, one of his like many experiences that he had in college. This is some serious stuff.
Seriously. Yeah. And they come into our lab because they maybe can't pay for private counseling outside.
Right.
And we provide free service for them. And
all right. So you lead that conversation and you're feeling like
pumped.
Pretty good.
Man, I was, because look, let's be honest. Psychology degrees aren't what they used to be, you know? And so the first thing I did was call my dad and said, hey, thank you for believing in me. Thank you for putting me through college. I made a difference in somebody's life today. I helped someone.
That's huge.
Which is what my goal was since I was a kid, was to be able to make a difference in other people's lives. And I was talking to him and I could tell he was kind of working in the background doing manual labor or something, which was common for our family to chop wood or, you know, dig a hole, do something. So it wasn't unusual. And, you know, he was glad that things were going well for me in school. And I remember the conversation very well because the last thing I said was, all right, love you, Dad. Have a great day. And I would encourage your listeners to always let the last thing you say to your family members be positive and helpful, because it could be the last thing you ever say to them. Okay. 30 minutes later, I called back, unrelated topic, and my stepmother answered the phone and said, your dad's passed out in the yard. The ambulance is here. I've got to go.
What?
All right. What's going on in your head at that point?
I just time, you hear about it. Time stands still. Everything slows down. You get the fight or flight kind of neurotransmitters start kicking up in your brain and you are trying to control those. And I turned an hour long trip to the hospital into 35 minutes. And when I got there, most of my family was already there. Mm-hmm. Dad's on life support And the doctor's telling us, well, you know, it was a heart attack and he was without oxygen for maybe 10, 15 minutes. So we're not going to know a lot until the swelling comes down. And there's a lot of unknown. And when you're in a moment of crisis like that, it's really hard to think straight. You're actually in a chemical imbalance.
And, not sure.
And the family has to make a lot of very important decisions, you know, in the coming days. For us, I slept on a metal chair for 7 nights in the waiting room in ICU. We would go into his room every day and talk to him. And things you see in movies when this happens, you know, sing to him, pray over him, anything, hoping that he would get up out of that bed. But he didn't respond. And we didn't know what to do. So first, I would tell your community, if you don't have an advanced medical directive, if you don't have a living will, find somebody in the community you can do that with, because it will protect your family from heartache. And you may think, well, I'm 35. You know, this is, you're talking about somebody, my father was 50 at the time. If he had planned in his 40s, you know, maybe we wouldn't have experienced it like that.
Right.
Because it's a chaotic and horrible moment for any family to experience. What made it even more trying for us, and I'm gonna try to say this without being emotional. You know, we found out that had he lived, and the hospital was very gracious to us. They explained next steps very well, but we were going to have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. You know, he was going to be weaned off of life support, or it was going to be a Terry Schiavo story where he'd be on life support in a facility for the next 10 years. And it's an act of Congress to get them unplugged.
Right.
So things were happening fast and we weren't really prepared for that. One of the things I wasn't prepared for is that if he had lived and moved to a facility or was able to go home miraculously, your health insurance is not designed to cover that.
Tell me more about that. What does that mean?
Right. Nor Medicare or anything else. Your health insurance is designed to get you better. If you have an accident, illness, injury, doctors and hospitals provide the care, your health insurance is going to pay for it. But if you get to a point, which we did on about the fourth or fifth day, where they say this is not recovery care, nor will it ever be, this is custodial care, maintenance care, chronic care, that's all code for long-term care, extended health care, long-term services and support. And at that point, the family is responsible for paying for or providing that care.
And at 50, your dad, I mean, as most financial professionals would tell people, you don't need this until 60 or older, right? I mean, at 50, your dad probably didn't have that sort of coverage.
Yeah. And this was 20 years ago when it wasn't as common to have some type of plan in your workplace,
right?
Or financial advisors, I think, were just learning to put this on their checklist of things that you check off. Really not something that he would have thought about in his 40s, 20 years ago.
Which is interesting, though, just knowing a little bit in our conversations, your dad worked for a major health insurance company.
Yeah.
Health insurance company. Yeah.
Right. He was in management at our state's largest health insurance company, filled with wonderful people. I want to say that it is a great company. They are a caring company and they have wonderful people there, but it's not designed to pay for your long-term care.
Yeah.
So we learned that lesson the hard way. And a lot of people come into my office when they're in the moment of crisis like that, and they don't realize that your health insurance, your disability, Medicare, nothing else is designed to pay for this, that family has to provide that care.
Now, before we get into more of the details of that, because I definitely think there's a lot of questions we can ask in light of this. One thing you've already mentioned that I don't want to miss, some people may be hearing advanced medical directive.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us that do not know what that is, what does that mean?
I would definitely speak to one of your attorneys in the community, but I've already done this. We went to my attorney and they ask you a lot of questions and say, look, if you cannot communicate with your family, what do you want to happen? You know,
in the event of a catastrophe,
right,
like this, or
you're hit by a bus, you have a stroke, something happens and you cannot communicate well with them, what are your wishes? Do you want to be on life support? Do you want to have a breathing apparatus hooked up to you? Do you want a feeding tube? And they'll ask you different versions of that question. It feels like too many times, but it's just to nail down exactly what you want, what your wishes are going to be, so that if your family is in the moment of crisis, they don't have to guess and they don't have to live with the trauma of sitting around having to make that decision to wean you off of life.
So while you are of sound mind, are making that plan ahead of time so that nobody else has to kind of bear that burden.
Right.
So this is obviously a traumatic moment in your life. It also changed the course of your life in a lot of ways. Explain that, because obviously the passing of your father, you're being exposed to a lot of things that you guys didn't know. What happened next?
Yeah. So when I finished graduate school, I wanted to learn the best way to teach other people not to experience something like this, plan for something like this ahead of time. So I went to a financial planning firm, a national financial planning firm, got my licenses, became a registered representative, a financial advisor, to be able to train and teach other people. And then I had the opportunity to actually go and start a long-term care product with that same health insurance company that my dad worked for. It was like coming home to a family.
Yeah.
And I was so incredibly grateful to them for the opportunity, because I felt like, being who they are, we know who they are, that they would have the best leverage to communicate that message to the employer workforce, to their groups. Mm-hmm. And we did that for 10 years. But guys, something happened during that time, about 10 years ago now, that only reconfirmed my passion for educating people on how important this is, regardless of your age. About 10 years ago, my beautiful, lovely wife, in October, will have been married 19 years. Nice. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Mm. And that's a devastating diagnosis, you know, especially in your mid-30s. The thing of it is, we already had a plan in place, because I do this for a living. And I thought it was hypocritical for me to tell you how important it is, and I don't have the coverage.
Right.
So when we were in our late 20s, we bought the biggest, best plan we could. And I was really grateful that we had that plan in place, because in our mid-30s, that diagnosis makes you uninsurable. People don't realize you have to have a plan in place, or most of the times you're going to want to have a plan in place before you're diagnosed with something that makes you uninsurable. And yes, that could be at 35.
Yeah, I think the times that I've talked to folks about long-term care or thought about it, there's some internal questions I think people are asking, and they may not verbalize them. You've had two very real experiences that most people may never see. So for that person that says, I don't know that this is for me, like this doesn't apply to me, mm-hmm. What would you say to that person?
I would say the number one reason I'm grateful, and I use that word specifically, that we have a plan in place, is not just because my wife will have a care need at some point in the future. We're almost guaranteed that, right? That's not why I'm grateful. I am grateful because, God forbid, something happened to me, like happened with my father.
Right.
She will not be the one that will have to provide my care.
Yeah.
And thereby jeopardizing her health.
So it's not just a personal issue. It's how does it affect those around you?
Exactly.
How have you seen that happen in your experience?
A lot of people, it's incredibly emotional. I had somebody come to one of our sessions here recently at a worksite enrollment. And I went through this story and I explained to her the kind of the technical stuff that we'll get into later. And she said, "Where were you 3 months ago?"
Mm. Oh.
And I said, "Ma'am, I've been here for 7 years enrolling this group at your benefits fair every year. I'm so sorry." And she said, "Well, you know, she had a family member who had just been diagnosed with something and was going to have to receive care in home. And this is in November of last year. And it was going to be $7,000 per month for them to pay for that care." And she found out the hard way, like we did in the moment of crisis, that nothing else is designed to pay for that. So they were not only going to have to pay for that care, but provide that care. And I won't get in too heavy in the statistics on this call, but you know, the average caregiver loses about $300,000 in opportunity cost of providing that care. It's not just emotional.
It becomes a full-time job. I mean, we've had friends and family who've had to care for a parent or someone, sometimes a child, and it is a full-time job. It is something that consumes you it, I mean, we already see how it plays out in, you know, in sports world and other things when people have divorces or have health issues or someone close to them and how it impacts their life. It is something though that you just don't think about, right? It's one of those things where we're rocking along. We've got great businesses. We've got kids at, you know, involved in different things. And this is, hey, we're trying to be good stewards of our money. We're trying to save up money. We're trying to build passive income streams. And we never think about the fact of what if something happens to me and now I'm put in a position where not only am I, you know, without coverage, but I'm a burden out to the family and everything else.
And it causes a lot of strain in the family. I'm going to go back to my days of counseling and psychology. You know, if you've got three siblings and something happens to mom or dad, there's a lot of infighting there typically on who's somebody's providing more care. Somebody's not providing enough care.
Inequality.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there becomes, you know, infighting and it destroys relationships.
Yeah. We've seen that too, where you get, you know, that again, everybody loves mom or everybody right. loves dad. But they will want to do it a completely different way, right?
Right.
Their level of care is different than what the other person would do. And if it's usually the one who's closest to, you know, and maybe proximity to the parent right. that ends up providing that care. And then, like you said, we've seen that kind of infighting amongst the other siblings. Yeah, it could be devastating to a family.
Well, if you think about it, you've got a few hundred thousand, a few million dollars set aside. Everybody's going to want to spend that differently.
Yeah.
And if you don't already have a plan in place and a directive down to say exactly how that's going to happen, it can be very difficult.
So we're letting the cat out of the bag here, right? I mean, what we're talking about is something that's referred to in the financial world as long-term care. Mm-hmm. And it's something that most people avoid because they say, I'm not 80, right?
You know,
I'm not on my way into the...
Yeah, that doesn't apply to me.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is something that applies to a 35-year-old, to a 50-year-old. Let's kind of dig into that a little bit. So here I am. Obviously, you have some very like personal stories. You know how this is applied.
Mm-hmm.
You change careers. You're now teaching people this. You're having these conversations on a regular basis, but I'm sitting here listening and I go, man, is this something I really need to do? So help me understand, you know, like one, when I should take action on this. Is there an income, you know, do you see people that, hey, this isn't something they should do kind of thing? Talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. We do say, you know, 50,000 in income or 50,000 in assets. And that's kind of a government number. Okay. I mean, there really are guidelines out there. I've had people with less than that who've asked me for a plan and we found a plan for them because it happened in their family. It was very emotional. They didn't want it to happen to their kids.
Right.
Basically.
So you're saying somebody even with less than $50,000 of income
wanted
has been
coverage.
Able to find a plan that fit mm-hmm. for them.
Okay. Yeah. And it was just to protect their loved ones, you know, to keep them from having to coordinate that care all on their own. Being able to shift that risk, leverage whatever money you do have.
So for the stallion over there who doesn't understand how all this stuff works, let's break it down very simply for him.
Yeah, right. I'll be your scapegoat.
Right.
We all know you're an expert, Russ, right?
Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I've been in the financial industry for 15 years.
Yeah.
I know all of these things. I understand all of this stuff, but just for Joey's purposes here.
Right.
Let's talk about kind of what does a plan look like? One, how do I start? Like, you know, the fear of the unknown to me is the issue. Like, how much will this cost me? Like, you know, what should I, you know, what are the things that I should be, you know, wanting to get when I'm talking to a provider for these sort of things? Like, I just don't know all those basic questions. So for somebody dumb like Joey, let's break it down really simple.
You just let it out. You said, for me, you said, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Did I say that? Now we're clear.
A little bit. well, and to go back to your previous question, when is the right time to look at this? And I did finally come up with a perfect age. I know exactly when everyone should have a plan in place. So get ready for this.
I got my pen.
Right. So it is the month before you are diagnosed with something that otherwise makes you uninsurable, or the month before you have a car wreck or an accident or something that would make an insurance company say, we're not going to accept you.
So just put that on the calendar.
Right. Yes.
And you're good.
You're good. Set. Just like with your State Farm, you call up you can't call them up when your house is on fire and say, can I get homeowners coverage now? My house is on fire. And I say that lightly, but there are people who are in a moment of crisis and it's not funny.
Yeah.
But that is a good analogy that you can't call them up when you've been in a car wreck and say, may I purchase some automobile insurance now?
Right.
And the same is true with this, with extended healthcare. You have to have a plan in place before you're otherwise uninsurable. And your audience understands supply and demand. Pretty basic economic theory.
Right.
Okay. There are fewer carriers, fewer options in the market than there have been in a long time. And with fewer options and more people wanting it, more people want it, fewer people offer it, supply and demand, they can charge what they want and they can make it more difficult for you to get this coverage. Right. So we're seeing that underwriting threshold become even more difficult. We're having folks ask family history and they can actually limit the benefits you're eligible for. You know, did your family have dementia?
Because that's a huge risk to it the is. Longevity of that.
And there's a genetic predisposition and they say, well, you know, if you've had that in your family, we're going to underwrite for that. So I would tell your listeners, your audience, your community, don't wait. It's as soon as you feel like you can have this conversation.
Well, I feel like you ever see people post online, like I was today days old when I learned blank.
Right.
I feel like that applies here. It's like I was today days old when I learned my need for long-term care. I need to get a plan in place, have an advanced medical directive. Like we're talking about some very clear steps people can and should be taking before those things happen.
All right. So you kind of hit me square between the eyes. I don't know when these events are going to happen. Right.
Right.
I wish I had Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure time capsule,
you know,
phone booth. Right. Or the DeLorean, right. All of those things don't exist now yet.
Yeah.
if they were, then we would do that. So we don't have that. So we know take action.
Right.
So what does that even look like for somebody? Let's just, again, look at somebody, you know, very physically fit. We'll use me as an example here.
Of course. Flipping weights.
what does it look like for someone early 40s, devilishly handsome?
Right.
How does that work?
Benefit design. There are so many different options, you know, but we're going to go vanilla right here and not really get advanced in the planning. We'll just straight up traditional, you know,
I love vanilla,
right? LTCI plans. You know, a 40-year-old could get good quality coverage from a highly rated carrier and they could pay $50 a month. They could pay $250 a month. It just depends on,
that's the range,
right? Okay, good. What benefit design they're looking for.
Right.
But that's without any riders, without any return of premium, without any extras, bells and whistles.
So you're saying the first step is just to write a check?
Yeah. The first step we usually use, and it's difficult, is to ask some questions. You know, we sit down and have a conversation with somebody and see where is your health right now? Because there could already be some options that are not on the table for you.
So the first step is for somebody to go reach out to somebody who provides this and like kind of disclose their stuff. So what are those questions that they're going to expect to hear in a first meeting? So they're kind of preparing themselves.
Right. There are a list of diagnoses that if you've already had, you're uninsurable. Obviously MS, you know, mm-hmm. Parkinson's, Huntington's, insulin dependent diabetics, comorbid with neuropathy or retinopathy. I mean, that's one we get a lot around here is diabetes, insulin. Diabetics. But even something like, and this really surprised me when it first happened to one of my clients, they had a herniated invertebral disc. We all sit at a desk pretty frequently. This lady had sat at a desk. I'm checking my posture right now.
Everybody just sat up
straighter. We all sit at our desk. She had a herniated invertebral disc and she was receiving an epidural injection for pain management. Mm-hmm. And it was so she could go through physical therapy. Well, the carrier that we were working with looked at that diagnostic and treatment code and said, this is chronic pain management. You're not insurable.
Wow. Well, and you think about that, right? We were all just going through like trying to increase our posture, like pull our shoulders back, right? But what's the one thing that we do every single day where we have this 16-pound nugget on top of our shoulders. And what are we doing? We're leaning over, we're looking at our phone. Is that not putting extra pressure on our back? So we're putting ourselves in a position to have some sort of chronic
issue
there.
Right. Well, and I also hear from people who say, this is never going to happen to me. I'm physically fit. I'm very active. I take care of myself. Well, guess what, Stallion? You are.
Thanks for that vote of confidence.
Right. You are actually doing exactly what you need to do to cause an extended healthcare need in the future, because according to a Harvard School of Public Health study, there is a direct positive correlation between longevity and the need for extended care. And I know this sounds like rocket science, but the older you get, the more likely you are to need this kind of care.
So if you are doing all the right things health-wise, then you're going to live a lot longer, which then is going to potentially have you in that range where the chronic illness would set in.
Bingo.
Yeah. All right. Well, man.
You're just shattering all of these internal thoughts that people are having, like, it doesn't apply to me. That can't be me.
Right.
It could absolutely be me.
Okay. So those sort of things, I need to know that they're going to ask me about some potential medical issues that I've had. Mm-hmm. What's next? What's the next step for me?
Then when I'm doing a personal consult, we try to find a balance between, sorry, I talk with my hands and I think I hit the mic again. I apologize for that. We try to find a balance between the premium that they're paying, you know, what are they giving for this coverage, and the benefit that they'll be receiving.
Yeah, I think that's a question some people have, and even they say, well, I don't want to be, you know, insurance rich, right?
Right.
I mean, like, where's the balance there? So how do you find that balance?
Right. It's an individual decision.
Okay.
I mean, and it takes a lot of time. Our average conversation to close is about three and a half visits per individual that we enroll, mostly in worksite. We do universities, hospitals, NASA DOD contractors, and folks like that. So I don't just sit down with them one time and we figured it out.
Right.
You know, we go through and talk about how much do you want to self-insure? Because that may be an option for some people. Well, it's how much of that risk do you want to transfer to a financial institution, and then have professional care coordination by the experts in facilitating your care so your family's not doing it all on their own. And if we can find that balance, showing them what the average cost of care is and average length of care, going over some things like that, that helps get them in the frame of mind of, well, how much do I want to transfer?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that we pay for in our life that we would prefer not to have to pay for, but it's just a cost of doing business.
Right. Right.
And to me, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I don't have long-term care. So we'll probably be having a conversation shortly here after this, but that's one of those things. I mean, good job on getting on the podcast. You hit me. You got me.
Today, days old.
We need a few more of you guys to sign up on the community. I got to pay for this thing.
Right. Right.
But seriously, I mean, as a father, as a husband, I don't want to lay responsibility off to someone else, have to take care of these things. I want to be as responsible as I can. And to me, that's the cost of doing business, to be a responsible dad, to be a responsible husband. Because at some point in time, if I keep trying to take good care of myself and being around people who are encouraging me like Joey is by eating better and everything else, it is one of those things where that could be part of stuff. I see my father right now. My father has all sort of health issues. I mean, he is an insulin dependent diabetic, and mm-hmm. it is affecting all his organs. And that is definitely a genetic disease. And there's plenty of people in our family that have had that. And who knows if that happens. His was onset much earlier, and I've passed that age, but, you know, we don't know when that time can happen. So I do think this is something that, you know, hey, I'm just going to chalk up to cost of doing business.
Right. Yeah.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. We've been talking, and this may take us a little bit off on the trail here, but there's some thoughts about long-term care insurance that I think are somewhat antiquated. Maybe not. Maybe you can answer this for us. Some people have said, well, if I don't use the coverage, I've just paid for it for years and years and years, and I get nothing for it.
Right.
So what, I mean, one, is that true? And two, if not, what's the alternative?
It depends on how you set up the plan. And used to, yeah, that was the conversation we had 20 years ago at the beginning of this.
Well, I think that's what's embedded in people's minds is what was 20 years ago.
Because they were being taught that by what their parents were doing or whatever.
Right. And the industry is only 40 years old. I mean, life insurance has been around for what, 150, 200 years?
Right.
We don't have a long time horizon of which is the best plan, but we figured it out now. And it's not going to be the same plan for everybody, but it is going to be a plan that doesn't just provide the money, it provides the care coordination as well. So,
but do the current ones, if you pay into them and you never have a care need, you just lose all that money?
Yeah, used to, that's what we would say. And we'd look at it like your homeowner's insurance. Man, I'm glad I had this coverage. I'm glad I had the protection. But if I never use it, I'm glad my house didn't burn down.
Right, exactly.
You know, but the carriers, the insurance companies heard from the consumer and said, we hear you. We're going to provide options where you can get money out of this if you want to, because a lot of people didn't like the user to lose a concept. You're dead on. Absolutely correct. So now you can add a rider to traditional long-term care insurance if you want to, which will pay you a benefit to a beneficiary. If you never use it as long-term care, they'll write a check.
Almost like a death benefit.
Yeah, like a death benefit. And the opposite and equal version of that is a hybrid plan. Hybrid plans are kind of all the rage in the industry right now, and it's more palatable to people. It costs quite a bit more, but they'll look at it and say, one of the carriers we use has a rate guarantee, a lifetime rate guarantee. And if I use it for long-term care, there's an unlimited benefit. Well, if I don't use it for long-term care, a beneficiary gets a death benefit, you know, a couple $100,000. And I've not thrown this money away. It's been a good investment.
So here, and we're kind of jumping around a little bit, but these questions are coming to my mind as I'm trying to apply this to my own scenario and those in which I talk to on a regular basis, is how do I know that I don't already have some sort of form of this coverage? So for those of the people who are working for a large corporation, right, there, you get this million page packet when you start, you just like start checking boxes, you're paying for everything, you know, you got cable for your buddy over here, you know,
right.
You got your United Way contribution.
Always.
I mean, you got everything you can have. So how do I know, how do you help people decipher, you know, maybe potentially their group covers it, what that covers, is that a good plan? Yada, yada.
That's a great question. And it's one we hear often, because people will come to our meetings and we don't use the phrase long-term care much anymore, because there are some ideas that come along with that and they think it doesn't apply to me. So we try to change that conversation a little bit, but when they do come in, they'll go back to the office. We did an enrollment for a 2000 life company, and the early adopters, the people that came to the meetings first, because they weren't mandatory, they were voluntary, were people that this had happened to. Then they go back.
Real life experience.
Right.
Yeah.
So they go back to their office and they say, did you go learn about the new benefit we're offering, the long-term care? And they'd say, no, I've got long-term and short-term. I'm taken care of. Don't worry about me. And they would educate them. That internal champion would educate them and say, nah, it's disability. This is different. It doesn't cover extended health care. You need to go learn about this. So a lot of people think that their health insurance will pay for it, and they learn the hard way like we did. That's not what it's designed for. Others think, well, disability. And disability is incredibly important. I'm not saying it isn't important, but it replaces your income if you can't work. You know, you want to keep the water on. You want to keep the mortgage paid. There really is nothing else. And I don't want to continue to let the cat out of the bag, but the stakeholders in this conversation, can I speak about that a little bit? The stakeholders
please.
In the conversation, the stakeholders are begging you to have a plan in place. Who are the stakeholders? Let's talk about the providers first, the people that are going to be providing your care. The American Medical Association came out with a directive last year. They adopted a policy in their House of Delegates that people should be made to have long-term care insurance through their employer, like other benefits, with an opt-out provision.
Oh, wow. Like it's just given that you're going to take it unless otherwise.
Right.
Unless you choose
unless you actively opt out, because they know they can't provide care that you can't pay for.
Well, I mean, we were listening to a video the other day that was on the tax train is coming, and there was all of these expenses as to why the government is running out of money, why Medicaid and Medicare and all of these different government facilities were not going to have it. And one of them, they were talking to the CEO founder of CrossFit, and he brought up the millions of people in diabetes and what that was sort of burden that was going to create to flush the system. So this is kind of their option is, hey, we gotta start getting them on the corporate level to go ahead and opt in. So we're not on the hook.
Offload that risk to them.
It's expected to be about $30 trillion of unfunded liability. And we've tried, okay, as a nation, we have tried to educate people, but we've failed. Because first and foremost, Americans don't like being told what to do by the government or anyone else. Sure. Okay. And they can't legislate personal responsibility. I mean, they did with cigarettes and seatbelts, but not long-term care. We tried with the CLASS Act, Community Living Assistance Servant Support Program, it was a part of PPACA, and then it was repealed for a lot of reasons that I'm not going to bore you with right now. But it is interesting to know that the other stakeholder in the conversation, the pair of last resort governments around the world, are mandating an LTCI plan in place for all of their citizens as far back as Germany in 1995. 2.5% of your income goes into your long-term care insurance plan. And as recent as Singapore last year mandated that if you're 30 or older, you have to have a plan in place through your employer.
Wow, 30.
30.
So they've seen the need for that.
30 or older, you have to have a plan in place through your employer.
So I hope this is in the same vein. I don't mean to keep jumping around.
Go ahead.
But somebody listening to this and they say, well, maybe I'm not in a position to have to get this in place right now, but what about my folks, right? They're at this age where they're starting to see mom or dad slow down a little bit. How does this apply? I mean, one, how would you encourage them to have that conversation? Like, hey, I'd like to buy coverage on you. Is there a good way to, you know, explain that? And then two, I mean, is this a good thing for them to be thinking about?
It is. It is a good thing for them to be thinking about sooner than later. And I'll give you a very clear reason that I couldn't believe when I was doing my research. I told you guys about the filial support laws that have been passed in 30 states now. When I first read this PTOS case in Pennsylvania back in 2012, I couldn't believe it. But here's how, can I tell that story?
Please.
Mom goes into a facility. She was Medicaid eligible. And for your listeners, there's a big difference between Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare is health insurance for people over 65 or with special needs. Medicaid is welfare. It's right. For folks who have $2,000 personal net worth. She was Medicaid eligible and she incurred a $90,000 expense. Well, she got better and she went back to her homeland of Greece. Her son, who owned a chain of restaurants, gets a bill from the facility and they said, we need $90,000. And he says, well, no, she's Medicaid eligible. You can go after her. And he said, we don't want Medicaid. Medicaid pays 70 cents on the dollar. We want retail. We want it from you. And it went all the way to the state Supreme Court. They ruled in favor of the facility, citing filial support statutes. And that is an old English law that says you got to take care of your family, right? And now it's been passed in 30 states. And literally, if you have a parent who has an extended health care need and they don't have money to pay for it, the facility can, by law, sue you.
Wow.
So
it's now important for us to know what our parents have or even more so what maybe they don't have.
Right.
And so how do you encourage the family to have this conversation? Let's say you're the 30 to 50 year old kid and you're trying to say, okay, mom, dad, learned about this today.
It's a tough conversation with mom and dad, right?
Right.
How do you see that going down?
I would encourage them that maybe if they said something like, look, I heard about a story today of someone who went through an unexpected healthcare crisis with their family, and it was really tough, and I don't want that to happen to us. So, and they can even, you know, selfishly, they can say, look, mom, dad, if something like this happens to you, I don't want to be in a position where I've got to make this kind of decision. So let's go ahead and write down some plans, some ideas. Do you have a medical directive? Do you have plans in place? And that can kind of lead into, well, what funding mechanism is there? Because your health insurance isn't going to pay for it. Medicare doesn't pay for it. Where's that money going to come from? We can't pay for it.
Well, and these just aren't everyday conversations you have, right? I mean, we are trying to make money a conversation that's happening on the reg. Well, when you're talking about events, medical directives, what's going to happen if I get into a situation where I needed extended health care, that's not, I mean, that's so far from the norm. But if we're going to be responsible, if we're going to be looking out for all areas, this has got to be a part of our assessment that we're doing for our family, for our future. So, John, this has been amazing. Like you have won. I mean, thank you for sharing your story. I mean, obviously, what heartbreak to hear about your father at such an early age. I know that made you grow up years earlier than you probably wanted to on some things with your wife. But just these stories are, I mean, it's changing my life. I know that because we're definitely going to get together. Last question I have here is because I know I said a second, 15 years, I was a CFP. These are things that I should know about. And I've heard about, by the way, but, and this is sort of like a softball question for you.
Go ahead.
But at the end of the day, I know my inadequacy in this. Like if somebody called me up and said, "Hey, Russ, could you help me with a long-term care policy?" Well, the fact that I have an insurance license allows me to help somebody with that, but I would not be helping them. I would be literally hurting them because I would not know those things. What do you say? You know, obviously we want to, you know, let people know about your company and stuff like that and love for them to reach out to you. But if they're in a situation where they're different state or they don't want to get online and talk to you, how would you tell them to qualify the person that they are going to go talk to about this so that they make sure that they get the right coverage?
First and foremost, that they work with a specialist. And I'll, you know, here are some websites they can look at, longtermcare.gov, where the federal government is telling you, begging you, get long-term care insurance. And these are the qualifiers, if you will.
Okay.
LTCfeds.com, you can look at the actual worksite plan that federal employees have through the government for their long-term care. But I would say, make sure it's a specialist, you know, somebody who specializes. And I have nothing against general practitioners, but, you know, I don't want my podiatrist working on my heart, you know, that they are a specialist. CLTC designation actually means something. They could probably go to altci.org and look for someone there. But yeah, certainly we'd love to help them from California to Carolina as well.
So real quickly, how does somebody, if they want to reach out to you, how would they get in touch with you?
Yeah, easy enough. LTCIplans.com. is probably the best way to do that. John@ltciplans.com, J-O-H-N. Or they could call us 888-915-3197.
Is there any sort of, I know you've created so much content and you've been an amazing blessing to us to keep sharing. You're going to come into the community, you're going to share some stuff there, but is there like a video or is there something like more as a follow-up to this that you could point somebody to?
We do. We've got some content on YouTube, but on our website, if you click on the information tab in the menu, you can click on research, and that's where we put the most valuable information we could find over the last 20 years doing this. That comes mostly from third parties, you know, that didn't come from me or an insurance carrier. It came from the stakeholders in the conversation to drive home the point about how important it is. And there are some great videos on there as well that might be helpful.
And what's that website one more time?
LTCIplans.com.
All right, perfect.
So, by the way, just in case it wasn't clear, John is already in our community. He is already there to answer your questions. He is going to do a Q&A because obviously Russ and I probably left a bunch of those questions on the table. This is a big subject. It's not, you know, something that's very minute or acute. So, if you want to be a part of that Q&A, join the community today. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com, sign up, and you can be a part of that conversation, or you can watch it if it already happened in the past. So make sure to do that.
Thank you again, John, for stopping by. I really appreciate you.
You're very welcome.
If you've been listening to our podcast, you're like, man, I love what you guys are talking about. I want to build passive income for myself. I want to use one of these five pillars to do it. But what do I do? Tell them, Stallion. It is so easy.
You got to take the first step, right? Go to the longest URL in history. It's free call. wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Again, you may want to write it down. freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. You can set up your own time on our calendar, and we are looking so forward to meeting with you.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.